good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Top of the not morning you or whatever.
Morning somewhere.
It's true.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Internet, and everyone adjacent to it.
Hello, Jason Howell. How are you?
I'm good.
We are adjacent to you.
Yes. Yes. I like that. I think that, actually, you know what that reminds me of? When I was a kid, I remember the first time I heard the word adjacent, and I was really confused.
Yeah.
I don't remember the context, but I do remember it happening and going, oh, wow, there's a word that sounds a lot like my name.
I think we all have a word like that. Yeah. Mine was serendipity.
Mm.
Where I was like what? You talking to me? What? What's that mean?
Oh, no, that's nothing to do with me.
Okay. Serendipity.
Yeah. I imagine you could use it to mean like you've been jacened. I've adjacened you.
Yeah, right. Like what is adjacent? I am adjacent, but
been adjacened. All right. Enough of old timey slang and puns on our names. It's time to beat the Tom Tom of Tech News. Here we go. In 3, 2. Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, our listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Scott Hepburn, Jeff Wilkes, Paley Glendale, our new patron, Mike. Everyone, welcome in, Mike. Yay.
Hey, Mike.
And oh my gosh.
Yay.
It was Harriet's birthday yesterday. How did we miss that? So sorry, Harriet. Happy birthday. Be kind to your dad.
Happy birthday.
On this episode of DTNS, the Titans of Tech, Sam Altman and Elon Musk go to court over how open OpenAI should be. Should you pay Spotify to get audiobooks? And Jason Howell from AI Inside talks about the ethics of licensing user data for training generative models. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, St. David's Day, March 1st, 2024. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Animal House, I'm Sarah Lane.
And the other tech titan of Petaluma, I'm Jason Howell.
Drawing the top tech stories. In Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
I couldn't find a leak to pin to my chest for St. David's Day, as is traditional. Did any of the rest of you?
What does St. David do?
The patron saint of Wales. The country.
But what is he
the country.
Does. Oh, I was thinking maybe do I need to go down to SeaWorld or something?
No. Yeah, is he leaky or?
No.
You know, okay. St. Christopher's, like what you want while you're traveling.
Right.
What does St. David do?
He protects all of Wales, the country of Wales.
Yeah. Well, good for them.
It's a job. Let me tell you.
It's a lot of people.
I know. Everybody always thinks we mean the animal. and the Welsh are tired of it. All right. So now we've cleared that up. Let's start with the quick hits.
I don't speak Flemish, but I will tell you that Facebook announced it will remove the news aggregation tab from its US and Australian sites starting in early April. In Australia, this means it will no longer negotiate payments to carry news under the news media bargaining code. Once current deals expire in a few months, the Australian Treasurer will have to decide whether to designate Facebook as a business where news is a significant driver of Facebook use. If it does, then Facebook will be forced to negotiate under the code, and Meta will likely sue to dispute that decision. Facebook claims news only makes up 3% of what users are seeing in their feeds worldwide.
The weird thing about you saying you don't speak Flemish is you speak perfect Welsh. It's so odd. Apple has changed its mind and will offer the ability to save progressive web apps to the home screen on iOS in the European Union. The EU's new rules require Apple to allow alternate browser engines to its own WebKit, and Apple had asserted that maintaining local storage of PWA information for multiple browser engines was not worth the expense, because not that many people use it, and it would be required to offer equivalent services to all browsers, so it just wouldn't allow PWAs at all, keeping the playing ground level. However, those smart engineers at Apple have figured out how to use WebKit to store a progressive web app's data, even if the user has been accessing the PWA in a browser with another engine. So everything's good now. They can do it. Yay.
Yay. Android users who have rooted their phones or installed custom boot loaders, Jason Howell, looking at you, have reported that support for RCS messages isn't working. RCS is the industry standard for sending images, video, and other rich communication over text messages. Google says that some phones with altered software are prevented from accessing RCS support as an anti-spam and abuse measure. SMA, or MMS, continues to work on altered phones. Users of altered phones can also circumvent the problem by bypassing the Play Integrity API, though that also reduces security in other areas. Android also disables Google Wallet services if it detects the device has been rooted.
How many devices have you rooted, Jason?
Oh, God, over the years, too many to count. In the last, 8 years, none.
So you're
who does that anymore?
Yeah, that's awesome. The Information reports that Google offered to partner with Meta on Android XR, its operating system for virtual reality headsets, in late 2023, so just the end of last year, but Meta rejected the offer. Meta's Quest uses the open source version of Android, so Google thought, hey, we can partner up, bring the full version of Android that we support to your headset. Meta gets the overall development community benefits. Google gets the benefit of having Meta engineers contributing to the operating system, and it would expand the number of Android apps that work on the Quest, something that Meta has said it would like to do, especially apps from Google. So they would have more than just YouTube on the Quest. A likely sticking point was having to have the Google App Store. Meta would not want to offer Google's version of the store. In fact, Meta seems to want to make its version of the OS the standard and has been talking to LG and others about bringing the Quest OS to other devices.
If you want to have a printer with low maintenance costs and high privacy, consider a LaserJet. If you want to pay $7 to $36 per month to rent a printer that limits the number of pages that you print and thus makes you monitor your printing activities, then HP's new all-in-one plan might be the one for you. $7 per month gives you an HP Envy printer, lets you print 20 pages per month. $36 rents you an OfficeJet Pro and puts a 700-page limit per month on you. The plans also include ink and tech support, though they don't include repairs, which I have some questions about that. The printers also must be connected to the internet at all times.
Yeah, but $7 a month, huh? Yeah.
I mean, when would I even ever need to print more than 20?
Who says you can't put a price on privacy?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, let's get into this big court case. Elon Musk filing a lawsuit against OpenAI and naming Sam Altman and Greg Brockman as defendants, saying that the company and those two have violated OpenAI's own founding agreement. You may ask, what does Musk have to do with this? He co-founded OpenAI with CEO Sam Altman and President Greg Brockman in 2015.
Okay, so all right, we've got some inside baseball. What's really going on here, Tom?
Yeah, the founding agreement that was referenced in the lawsuit is in OpenAI's incorporated December 8th, 2015 certificate of incorporation, and it says, resulting technology will benefit the public and the corporation will seek to open source technology for the public benefit when applicable. The corporation is not organized for the private gain of any person. Now, Musk claims that because he was a significant founder or funder, I should say, of the foundation of OpenAI, that based on that founding agreement, he is accusing OpenAI of breach of contract and a few other violations because he says, well, I wouldn't have funded the company with no promise of getting that money back if I had been aware that somewhere down the line it would pursue profits, even if it's in a subsidiary, and Microsoft would be making tons of money off of it. So this is not what I signed up for when I gave him the money early on.
Okay, so that's what Elon Musk's argument is. What is OpenAI's defense against it?
OpenAI's defense will likely include the fact that its for-profit subsidiary has its profits capped. So it's going to say it's only for profit in order to provide some motivations. It doesn't change us from being a nonprofit. It's not meant to benefit any one entity. Yes, Microsoft benefits from it, but that's no different than what Mozilla does when it has contractors that use Firefox, and that subsidiary was necessary to continue the company. I would expect them to make that argument based on the fact that Musk left in 2018 and sort of abruptly stopped funding the company and didn't deliver a lot of the money that he said he was going to deliver. So they could even possibly do a countersuit. I don't think they'll do that. Musk also makes the more controversial claim in this lawsuit that GPT-4 is in fact artificial generalized intelligence. Therefore, the exact danger OpenAI was founded to guard against is there, and it must be opened for others to investigate. He alleges that GPT-4 is kept closed only to provide profit to Microsoft. OpenAI is probably going to argue that it's kept closed for the safety of humanity, that's why it's kept closed, and that the organization is just fulfilling its charter by keeping it closed.
All right, so if Elon Musk gets his way, what would he want the court to do?
Yeah, so in the lawsuit, he is asking the court to order OpenAI to adhere to its founding agreement. So in other words, stop trying to make money, open source all the things you can open source, and he's asking for unspecified damages. You have to have a claim of at least $35,000 in damages to bring this sort of claim as part of the lawsuit.
I guess it's going to be a lot more than that.
And he says in this lawsuit, it's at least $35,000 worth of damages that we can prove during court. He also suggests restitution of donations as a possible basis for the calculation. So he, in a sense, saying, I might just ask for my money back. All the money that I funded OpenAI with in the early days, just give me that back.
All right, so Jason, hearing all of this, big news in AI technology news today, what do you think is significant here?
Well, do I think it's an insignificant case? Absolutely not. OpenAI, you know, love them or hate them, they're arguably one of the most noteworthy players in AI at the moment. So I think that immediately makes it a big deal. And then you've got, of course, Elon Musk that makes everything a party. Maybe party is the wrong word, but he makes, you know, everything that he gets. I mean,
not all parties are fun.
That he turns and he turns his attention to becomes a party of good or party bad, whatever, you know, the worst party or the best party, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. I'm going to stop talking about parties now. OpenAI seems to be operating, in my view anyways, under a very different purpose than when they began. And I think it's pretty difficult to deny that outright. I mean, the deal with Microsoft really makes that more obvious even. And by the way, I'm sure that's a really big, you know, part, you know, all of this is probably a really big part of the that whole ouster and rehire thing that happened last year with Sam Altman, but that's just a guess. I think Elon has a point here, and there's no question about it. I'm curious about the burden of proof. Elon is referencing, you know, these emails. He's referencing the founding articles of incorporation. Is that going to be enough for him to get the win here? And then I think beyond that, how long is this going to drag out? Is this one of those cases that we're talking about years and years down the line? Because it is important, and we're at this early point of this like inflection point around AI. So we're going to see lots of cases like these. I don't know. I think OpenAI was founded on this kind of principle of openness and air quotes being good for all. And I think it's hard. It's difficult to ignore the fact that it's a money-making machine right now. Is that okay?
That's all true. But is that a violation of its foundation charter that is a breach of contract with Elon Musk? What the court's going to have to decide. And no, I don't think I don't think they will. Again, we don't know what evidence Musk might bring to court or what testimony might happen. So you're saying there's a chance. Yeah, there's a chance. I'll give it an 18% chance that Musk prevails in this. But I think most courts are going to look at this and say, hey, they've kept their nonprofit structure. It's totally normal these days for companies to create a for-profit subsidiary of a nonprofit entity. So just because they did that doesn't mean they're bad. OpenAI can make some compelling arguments that, yes, we will be open when appropriate. It has not been appropriate in these cases to be open, and here's why. And so I feel like they're going to prevail in court. You know, whether they'll prevail in the court of public opinion, they will prevail in court. And it's going to drag on for years. and we're going to be very entertained. It's going to be very entertaining because they're going to drag in all this testimony and expose a bunch of emails, and people will get some juicy gossip out of it.
Oh, it's going to be one of those cases. I think it's pretty funny that he calls out AGI as far as ChatGPT being, you know, AGI. I think that's a total stretch at this point. That kind of feels like, sorry.
No, go ahead. You tell me what you
think. Well, I was just going to say that feels that we're going to say the same thing, maybe. Yeah, yeah. But that feels like Elon Musk saying the thing he knows is going to get a reaction out of a certain group of people out there that are fearful of AGI.
Yeah, and he wants to use it to drag a bunch of OpenAI secrets out in court.
Yeah.
Because Elon Musk has a case. You're absolutely right. I'm not saying he doesn't have the right to bring this case, but another motivation he could have to bring a totally legitimate case is because he's also developing AI, and anything he can do to slow down a competitor is good for his business. And so if he can get them to drag out a bunch of secrets in court by saying, you're doing AGI, prove you're not, in court in front of everyone, then that's good for his business too.
Yeah, indeed.
There are levels to these things.
Yeah, wheels within wheels.
Many, many wheels and levels.
The wheels in the sky keep on turning. Don't you know it?
So true.
Well, if you listened to that song on Spotify recently, you might be interested in something that Spotify is doing. Wasn't a good segue,
Sarah.
No,
that was great.
No, it was great. Are you kidding me?
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Sometimes I like to be applauded. So Spotify added 15 hours of free audiobooks listening to its subscription plan. That was last year. Today, Spotify introduced a $9.99 per month option for its free users to also access that same audiobooks collection. It's called the Audiobooks Access Tier. It's similar to the service that it offers subscribers, letting customers in the U.S. stream 15 hours of listening from its catalog of over 200,000 titles. 15 hours of listening per month. Free Spotify users can still stream music and podcasts using its ad-supported service, but can also pay to listen to audiobooks without having to buy a Spotify subscription. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but I looked at this and I was like, okay. It's not really that great of a deal, but I guess if for whatever reason you simply do not want to subscribe to a Spotify account, you want to be on the free tier, you can at least get a $10 version of something that would be $16 otherwise.
Yeah, the other comparison is Audible. 15 hours a month. Let's just, for the purposes of this conversation, assume like that's about a book. You know, audiobooks range anywhere from 8 to 20 hours, but they're usually somewhere around 12, 13 hours, right? Yeah. So that's a book. Audible gives you one credit for one book a month for $15 a month. So when you put it that way, what's a screaming deal? You get a book a month for $10 versus $15.
I wanted to ask all of you, how do you enjoy an audiobook? For me, for whatever reason, when I'm at home, there are many times where I'm like, I have to do some, like, I don't know, vacuuming, or, you know, I have to cook something. Like, an audiobook would be a great thing to play, you know, on my home speakers. But I only like to listen when I'm driving. And I don't drive that much because I work from home. So to me, I'm like, 15 hours, I would never even do that. But back in the day when I was commuting 2 hours, you know, to and from work, that would have been a different conversation. Jason, where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to you, but I do use audiobook and, you know, and podcast content and stuff to tie into other tasks that I'm doing. Rarely do I ever, if ever, actually, now that I think about it, sit down and say, I'm going to listen to an audiobook right now. And that's like the thing I do while I stare into space, you know, like I never do that. I'm sure there are some people that do. It's always tied to doing something, be it driving, doing the dishes, taking the dogs on the walk. Yeah, that's how I listen to content like this.
Audiobooks fight for podcast space in my schedule, right? For sure. I either listen to podcasts or audiobooks kind of in the same situations. Although I'm the opposite of you, Sarah. I can listen to a podcast while I'm driving. I cannot listen to an audiobook easily while I'm driving. I do it sometimes if I'm really into a book, but I get distracted by, you know, not running into other cars, and then I lose my place. I'm like, wait, what did they say? Yep. Where did they go? And I got to rewind and all of that. So I tend to do it more when I'm like doing chores around the house, you know, doing the laundry, vacuuming, cleaning the bathroom, stuff like that, doing some gardening. Or I will sometimes do it at night, where I listen to an audiobook and then, like, you know, play like a real simple mobile game on my phone as I go off to sleep, something like that.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of audio. You know, some people are sort of like, nope, I'm either reading it or I'm not. Audiobooks aren't for everyone. And I don't think that, you know, an audiobook means that you don't pay attention to the story as much, but it does give you, like, the option to, in my case, like, drive to the grocery store or, you know, play a very simple mobile game. You know, nothing too crazy. That's sort of the beauty of the whole thing. Anyway, I don't know how many of y'all out there are interested in the Spotify new model for audiobooks, but if you are, let us know. Yeah, feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com.
Yeah, if you're like, no, this is perfect for me, even though it's only a dollar less than the full subscription, we're very curious about that.
I just don't know why you don't pay an extra dollar. Like, you get all that extra stuff. I guess if you don't truly
podcasts,
need it, why?
I guess? I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, a dollar, I don't know.
I don't know, Jason. A dollar goes a long way these days.
That's true. No, you're absolutely right.
You know,
right.
Think of all the things.
Yeah, with inflation, a dollar... Don't wait. You know what doesn't cost you a dollar to watch if you've already paid for the internet? It's our top five show at youtube.com/dailytechnewsshow. It's a quick show. It's a short these days, 60 seconds, where I break down five things you need to know about the world or technology. This week, Roger wanted to count down the top five reasons the Mac Mini is the best Mac. So that's what I'm doing. If you're like, no, Mac Mini, how's the Mac Mini is the best Mac. Take 60 seconds and watch. You can catch it at Daily Tech News Show on TikTok, DTNS Picks on Instagram, or as I said, youtube.com/Daily Tech News Show. Last year, companies like Reddit began pulling back, sharing their data sets, you know, restricting their APIs, a whole big revolt over that. Over the past month, a number of companies have partnered with content providers to get licenses to monetize training data. Yesterday, we talked about Stack Overflow's deal with Google. Google disclosed a partnership last week with Reddit. Reports allege that the parent of Tumblr and WordPress, Automattic, has been striking similar agreements with companies like Midjourney and OpenAI. Jason, a lot of people say that companies should pay to license training data, but what if that data is user data? Because the other thing people don't like is when companies share their user data and monetize it. Mm. We see that in the world of advertising. What do you think? Do these deals respect that complaint around data sharing? Where should we draw the line on this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on how a user feels about this. Comes down to is... You know, as with so many things that are monetized online based on kind of users' use, you know, the social media would be another example, is what kind of value do we actually get out of the product? Is what we're giving worth what we're getting? Do they feel like they have any control over whether their data is shared like this? In the case of, you know, some of these things that we're talking about here, I should also point out WordPress.com, not WordPress. So it's not the open source self-hosted thing. It's the, you know, it's the .com, not .org, which I got wrong on Wednesday on AI Insider.
Oh, I see.
but good, so I just want to throw that out there for anyone following along.
People get that wrong all the time.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah. It's easy to get confused. But Automattic has acknowledged that users can opt out of this. Tumblr added the opt-out option in February. But at the same time, you know, many people are not going to know that they even can do this. Many Sure. will not, and they're going to react anyways. So, you know, really at the end of the day, do people feel like that information is giving them something on the other side? I think is a real important aspect of this.
Yeah, I think this is inevitable, right? Like, we should have known this was coming.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% expected and inevitable. Throwback to Buzz Out Loud. We can't have our cake and eat it too, Tom.
Yeah, we can't both have a cake, but then also have eaten it.
Yes,
as the saying goes. Yeah.
That's right. That's how it's always in my brain now. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that. If what we want is future technology that does all of these really crazy cool things for us, then data is essential to building it. We have to decide what we really want as users. What are we willing to give in order to inform these things? I think the real challenge here with how this data is being used, with AI and where we're at in this inflection point with AI is that I think as users, we probably do want, maybe not everybody, but we probably want systems to do these really magical, neat things that improve our lives in so many ways. But the only way to do that is to fill it with really good, pertinent data. And siphoning out, large buckets of data so that only certain pieces go in there, it changes the ultimate product on the other side. And so, again, it goes back to what the users who have contributed this information say. They've posted onto Reddit, and now that data is being sold off, to inform these AI services of things. Like, if that's going to give you what you're actually looking for, I guess what it is it's a confusing thing where I think sometimes people say, I want really good things, but I also don't want this to be shared. And it's like, well, sharing that gives you really good things.
Yeah.
How can we respect your desire for that to be done in a controlled, respectable way that still gives you the good thing you're looking for?
I mean, there's a collision here between the fact that we have never adequately resolved the problem of who owns your own data, right? Mm-hmm. And for years, I've been a proponent of SOLID, which is an attempt by Tim Berners-Lee to create a system where you could have data under your control and still share it with people safely. It has not caught on. But the fact that we never solved that is now complicating this because... Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a whole episode of Know a Little More on ChatGPT and go at great lengths to show people that you aren't copying data. ChatGPT isn't looking at a database full of copies of data when it creates its things. It is looking at weights of individual words. And if I were to tell you, you need to pay the New York Times if you want to publish a count of the words that are in New York Times articles, you'd think I was crazy. Like, what? Mm-hmm. I can't say how many times they use the word the without a license. That's ridiculous. But that's essentially what ChatGPT does is a complicated version of that, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a copyright issue, but I do think that it's right for people to have a say over whether their data gets used in training data sets or not. So I think we need new rules around that. And the fact that we haven't figured out the rules around privacy is now complicating this.
Yeah, 100%. I will also mention that, when we use these services, we agree to a certain number of things. It's all there in the terms of service. And the reality is many of us, and I'm just as guilty as anyone, don't read it. And so we don't actually know what we're agreeing to. But I hate to break it to you. Reddit owns the data that you're putting onto the Reddit site. And they probably disclosed at some point in the terms of service that they want to do this. If they're not disclosing that, that is a big issue.
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. Yeah. Clicking OK on terms of service that would take you days to read also shouldn't be legally binding.
No, that's totally. You could use to make that more sense of that? An LLM.
An LLM. So. Yeah.
Right. There you go.
It all comes back around.
That's right. Full circle.
All right. Let's check out the mailbag.
This one is from Chris Christensen, who says, if you're looking for ways to spend your credit card points, people have those, on a plane ticket to somewhere really special, he might have the website for you.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. If you collect points and miles for travel, and you have a credit card, for instance, that gives you such points, and there are numerous credit cards that will do so, especially in the US, less so in Europe and other places, then I'm going to recommend a website to you called Points Yeah, YEAH. And if you're looking for a flight to buy with your airline points, then you can go to Points Yeah to price a particular itinerary. You choose where you're going, whether it's one way or round trip, and then your dates with some flexibility on the dates, and it will come back with a series of flights that will match that criteria and tell you how many points they are and what kind of points they would be. So it's a great starting place for a points and miles search. There's a number of these that are paid. This one has an upgrade to a paid membership, but it's not a bad place to start for free. The site again is pointsya.com, and this is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Think they use an LLM?
I think they probably will.
If they haven't, right? They probably will.
Even if it's not AI behind the scenes, they'll say it's AI. Yeah.
Real quickly, Detroit Lions Forever wrote in and said, has anyone else had their DoorDash app offer them money and discounts to take pictures of the food they order, or is it just me? Accurate photos, no need to rely on diffusion models, doesn't cost the restaurant a thing, we all win.
No, the answer is no. I don't use DoorDash as much as some people do, but I have an account. I use it here and there. They've never asked me to take a photo of my delivered meal, but if they did and I got a discount, I would be happy to offer them my submission.
And they'll use it to train their diffusion model.
Fine. I don't even care. Like, I just want to eat dinner.
Yeah.
Value.
You know what I think these companies should do? Don't use diffusion models to create images of your food that's fake. Don't make people out there, you know, take photos of food. Have Len Peralta draw your food. That is the best way to represent
your food.
I got to say
real quickly, that's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, hey, you got to take some pictures of this food for us, wouldn't you? And it's like, I don't know. It's like next thing they're going to ask me to take pictures of my feet or something.
No, please.
All right, we have enough food pics. Can we have some feet, please?
That's only one.
Anyway,
we
know why they're doing
feet
that.
They're just trying to get
more pictures of I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
So, their spaghetti.
That leads me to this question, Len. How have you drawn my feet today?
I didn't draw feet today. Although, you know, Elon Musk, right? I keep drawing this guy. That guy, right? So today I'm like, it's kind of ridiculous. He's like, why did you abandon your mission to benefit humanity and choose to be for profit? I really just did this so I could have OpenAI tell him to go Musk himself. Go Musk yourself. Anyway, that's...
Len, this is one of the good ones.
Yeah, it was not programmed to love you, Elon.
No, it wasn't. It's sometimes I go for the cheap joke. If you love cheap jokes, you can go and get this at Patreon. Patreon.com/Len. If you back me at the DTNS lover level, you'll get it for free. Or you can go to my store, LenPeraltaStore.com, and you can get it there, or you can commission me. You can do that as well. That's always fun. And I will draw your feet, so.
If you ask.
Len will draw your feet. Jason Howell, let's not talk about feet, but let's talk about where people can keep up with all that you do.
Well, if you would like me to send you foot pictures, then go ahead and send an email to Android Faithful.
She just said, Jake.
Now I blanked it. I'm sorry. AndroidFaithful.com for Android stuff. AIInside.show for AI show. A show I do with Jeff Jarvis talking about artificial intelligence. But I guess I'll outside of that, if I can throw one more in there, I've started to ramp up content on YouTube, and I'm doing the kind of more like reviewsy, somewhat like medium form, long form edited video content. Let me tell you, it's a lot of work, but I'm having fun with it. So go to youtube.com/@yellowgoldstudios or just yellowgoldstudios.com. will take you right there.
Yeah, fantastic. Go check that out.
And just a real quick note, Jason will be joining Eileen and I on Apple Vision Show, episode 5. We record on Monday, and we're so glad to have you.
Thanks. A requirement that I have an Apple Vision Pro in order to be on the show?
No.
Okay,
it's all things Apple.
Yeah.
All things Apple all the time.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it.
So Vision Pro, you know, encouraged, but not mandatory.
Yeah, you don't even have to have feet. Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. It's time again for the great GDI debates. We like to have fun on Fridays. We've got ethics and AI surveillance, fun, for or against data apps, and are you done with nostalgia culture? Stick around.
A reminder, we do the show live. You might be watching live, but if not, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We hope you all have a real nice weekend. We're back on Monday with Nika Montford joining us. Talk to you then.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and co-host Rob Dunwood. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz. Technical producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans. Social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding. Our mods, Beatmaster, W. Scott S1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, a.k.a. Gadget Virtuoso, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Tom McNeil. Our contributors this week were Ron Richards, Scott Johnson, Justin Robert Young, Jason Howe, and Chris Christensen. And thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Yay! Good job!
Yay. It was like a tunnel. I held my breath that entire time.
Wow! Really? It's amazing. You're the lungs on this guy.
I don't know how I did that, but
no,
wow.
I know.
Jason's like, there's so many people to thank.
I also held. Oh man, great show. Good.
Yeah,
stuff.
That's fun.
Yeah,
thank you,
Jason. I can't remember if you've been here for great debates on Friday before. Have you?
Yeah, I think the last time I was on, that was on a Friday, and there was a thing that I think was the debate.
We do different things on Fridays, so I have a hard time keeping track. But yeah, if you are ready, then
sure,
we shall begin.
To take an oppositional take?
I mean, that's between you and your God. If you want to, keep it interesting, it's always fun. Right. Play the devil's advocate.
Sounds good.
But we have propositions. You can take whatever side you want, and we will all see if we can sway each other from our positions. If we all end up on the same side, etc. Roger has selected these topics. They range from week to week. You know, sometimes they're more serious. Sometimes they're like, is taco a sandwich? Our first one is, are we over nostalgia culture? You know, bringing back old stuff, talking about how great the 80s were, bands, music, clothing, video games, trying to recapture the good times. Or if you're young, you know, live in a time before you were born. Are we done? Are we done? Who's against nostalgia culture?
Oh, there's no way you can squelch this.
Sure.
I mean, you know, kids being like, 90s. Oh, yeah, 90s. You know, like, I don't think you can say like, yeah, we're done with that. I mean, I feel like throwback stuff is like the 1970s. Mm-hmm. When I was a baby, you know, that's like the fun of it. But like now people have been born in 2010.
What?
Right.
And they're in their teens.
Impossible.
And they have opinions.
And they're like, oh, that time before like I was born when the iPod fashion. Was new. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like, how do you stop that? I feel like that's just a part of growing up.
Those old-timey songs, like Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah. Well, that's classic rock right there. Yeah.
Classic rock.
Go,
Roger. You got it.
I was about to say, like, when I came up with this question, it was less about people reliving a period of time or finding fascination. It's more about recycling old TV shows that they're bringing, like, for example, they redid Mean Girls.
Frasier.
Because it's a known property and there's an X amount of potential viewers or, you know, consumers that might buy into it. So we'll bring back, it can be movies, TV shows, it can be
New Kids on the Block. NSYNC's got a track on the next Justin Timberlake album, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, NSYNC had a track, and I think it did pretty darn well. You know, like, so, I mean, that's the thing, right? The nostalgia culture breeds things that, whether we love the product or hate the product, it still gets a lot of attention and drives a lot of revenue around these properties because people buy into it. So obviously there's something there. I'm a very nostalgic person. I love nostalgia in my life. I love going back to the Commodore 64 and playing those old games, even though they only last for like 10 seconds before I'm bored of it or whatever. Just the idea of like remembering what something was and the joy it gave me back then. At the same time, I do get a little annoyed of the kind of the rehash culture. Maybe it's not nostalgic culture, but it's like this idea that we've got to update and renovate and bring you something that's better than the classic. And that gets a little old to me.
I think it reminds this. I used to be sort of like I used to be super into the fan expos and fan conventions and all that. But there was at a point where there's a threshold where everything, you know, every 8 years there seemed to be the same thing that was recycled over, and I came to the conclusion that some of it's fun and some of it's great, but at the same time it's kind of exhausting. And I think it starves the room of oxygen for new ideas and for new things to propagate in a wider fashion, right? You can only have so many Star Wars before, like, someone says, you know, at least when I say, okay, I love Star Wars, but can we get something that isn't Star Wars for once? That
I think I'm Star Wars out. Kind of,
what about, you know, James Bond, though? James Bond, you could say, there's too much James Bond, but it just keeps going.
I do. I actually said that like last year. It's like,
fine. That's the easy answer to anything. It's like, person. But like most people are pretty still into James Bond. It's fine.
But at the same time, I'm thinking like, when Mission Impossible came out, who would have thought that would become a franchise?
I know, right?
Because it was its own thing back in the 60s, and that's kind of a franchise reboot that I thought was very interesting because they took some of the core elements, but they really kind of went like Mountain Dew, right? They made like, we're gonna have death-defying stunts, and we're gonna have Tom Cruise dangling from the helicopter. Or from, like, you know, a very precarious position on the side of a building. It was, you know, it was very much an action movie rather than sort of a Cold War spy thing. And I think that was kind of an example of a good reboot, Battlestar Galactica. They reimagined that away from the 1970s version when they redid it in the 2000s or 2010s. And I thought that was a good take because it didn't feel the same. It had similar ideas and similar setting, but the idea that they went with was different.
We know it's gone too far when they do a remake of the remake of Mission Impossible and they they circle back around and they're like, we're going to remake the Tom Cruise version.
I think it's very popular to be against this stuff, but I think it's just a cycle.
It is.
Everybody loves the early remake because they're like, oh, I missed this. You know, I'm so glad they're going to try to bring it back. It either fails miserably and everyone forgets about it, like the Avengers movie, not the Marvel one, the one that tried to bring back the 60s British spy Avengers. Or it works and everybody's like, great, let's have another. And then it's a law of diminishing returns until everybody's like, why do they keep making these things, right? Marvel rode that way longer than anybody else has. But even they have finally gotten to the end of that cycle. I just think it's a typical cycle.
So what do you think about the reboot of Naked Gun, the Naked Gun franchise, with Liam Neeson playing the Leslie Nielsen part?
Oh my goodness. That a real thing?
I hadn't even heard of that.
Yeah. I had not heard of that. Yeah.
That's so difficult because, I mean, Leslie Nielsen is Naked Gun, you know?
Right. Which also, Liam Neeson, like, his strength is like, I am, you know, I will protect.
I will hurt you in different ways.
Like, that is
But that was what Leslie Nielsen was known for before he was put in comedic roles.
Exactly. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean,
a lot of people don't realize that, but before Leslie Nielsen ever did the comedies, like in the 60s, he was considered to be like a very serious, you know.
It was Airplane that, you know.
Yeah, and then they cast him in Airplane, and everybody's like, Leslie Nielsen is in Airplane?
He's so funny.
Yeah. And before they saw it, they're like, he's in Airplane? He's not funny. He's not funny at all. And then He was hilarious.
He became, yeah. Well, really, you know,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is the other one that they constantly manage to bring back and recycle into a new, mm-hmm. you know, 3 or 4 season cartoon. I'm actually more impressed that they've taken something and they retell the same story each time, except that they start introducing new characters.
Scooby-Doo's another one.
Yeah.
That's still popular and still rejuvenated. Like, I can't imagine why.
Oh, I love Scooby-Doo.
But I mean, like, I can't imagine that they've been able to keep it fresh. Not that I don't like Scooby-Doo. I'm saying, like, how are the new ones still popular? Like, kids like the new Scooby-Doo? Like, but they do.
Kids like Scooby-Doo. Dogs who talk.
We should have done that for Daily Tech News Show. We should have just made the show dogs
to go back. There's a lot of lore for Scooby-Doo for the kids to go back.
Which is weird because it was a paper-thin show, really. It was just like, you know, literally that was the monster of the week concept.
If it wasn't for you kids, I would have gotten away with it every time.
And that dog that somehow talks and acts in an anthropomorphic fashion.
Sort of talks.
Well, it's interesting. Originally, he sort of talked, and then by the end of the series, he talked, which is the weirdest thing.
Raggy.
Before it was like a dog. Right?
And then because it was like, AI. It was at the end of the series. It was AI.
And then his nephew implants. has perfect diction, which is weird. Right?
Scrappy, second generation.
Yeah, you know, I always wondered about that. Why is Scrappy so smart all of a sudden?
Also, isn't that child abandonment? He just comes across his nephew at a train station.
Is that where you found
him? There's all these questions that are sort of.
Do you remember Scooby Dumb?
Yes, that was his country. That was his country cousin.
Yeah.
And there was Scooby D.
Can you imagine doing that today? Would never fly.
Scooby Dumb?
Scooby Dumb? You can't say that about.
Oh, yes, they would do it.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't know. They'd have to walk a real thin line with how they characterize Scooby Dumb.
Right.
To not be saying that Scooby Dumb is a representative of a certain
other dumb
class or group or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess I never thought about that, right? It's
just, yeah. Just I mean, today's day and age, especially, that would be a big deal.
But I will say to end my argument is I am over nostalgia culture. Bring on new stuff to me.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. But
you
know,
had a motive.
I'm with you. I tried to watch the new Mean Girls, not realizing that it was basically a theater production.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
You know, I thought it was just going to be the same movie, but with younger actors. And I was like, oh, they're singing. I
didn't realize that it was. And I've only seen parts of it. My daughters saw it and they came back. They were like, wow, that was a musical. I didn't realize that it was an actual musical that they turned into
a
movie.
It's a musical.
And so like, I thought that even when they told me that it was a musical film, I thought it was like, oh, their idea to like revitalize, you know, rejuvenate this old franchise is to make it a musical. But I guess it was actually a musical that did well. And then they turned the musical version of Mean Girls
into a movie,
a musical film.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, a lot of people I love a good musical. Give me The Sound of Music. I'll watch that all day.
I understand. Yeah.
You know,
Wonka
I don't
really
dislike
good.
Singing. I was just sort of like, oh, that's not what I was going
to
do tonight. Yeah.
Right.
I feel like if I were to say I am over nostalgia culture, it would just be saying I'm at a certain point in my life. Like, I think everybody loves it at a certain point of their life. Everybody hates it at a certain point of their life. And there are variations. Some people may be like, oh, I never really liked it. But you're more likely to like it at a certain point in your life.
And how you feel about it, too. I totally agree with you, Tom. And how you feel about it depends on, like, how old you are or what point you were in your life when the original thing came out. Like, I'm going to feel very different about, you know, a remake of something that was from when I was a child than somebody who was born 10 years ago would look at that and, like, not even care. But I'm going to have a deeper kind of reaction.
So I'm the grumpy old man who shouts at clouds.
But don't, I think there's also a point in your life where you're more likely to be like, I'm done with it. Too much. I've had too much, right?
Right.
Know? And maybe you're just at that point. I don't know.
Well, I mean, part of it for me, for example, like Romeo and Juliet, it's a tale as old as time and Shakespeare and all that. But when people do their versions of it, it becomes West Side Story or it becomes something like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same story.
But there's only so many stories that people like to hear. So part of it is like, yeah, that's just how the human brain works. We all want the hero's tale, apparently. That's all you
don't you want to share your
maybe your, someone your can childhood come up with the
with
wheel
your,
that's
with your kids, Roger?
I'm sorry? Go ahead.
Don't you want to share your childhood with your kids? Like, oh, I love
tried
this
to. They seem very disinterested in it.
Yeah. A lot of our childhood.
Except for my Transformers, because they have the toys and then like the little plastic thing that turns into a car.
A lot of our childhood films that we were really attached to, I've noticed at least in showing them to my kids. It's like a 40% chance that they're or 40% chance that they're going to like it, 60% chance that they're going to be bored out of their mind because everything moved at a different rate. What I mean? Like, just the attention culture is different now versus when we were younger.
Yeah.
We're just old. I'm just old.
I'm done with nostalgia.
We're done with nostalgia.
Mollywood is on assignment.
Done with nostalgia.
All right, let's move on to our next title, our next question, I should say. Should AI be used in surveillance?
Oh.
All right. So, you know, and Roger lined out some of the arguments you might have to say yes, it enhances public safety and security, you know, in a place where there is surveillance. This, let's not get too confused. We're saying there are times when there should be surveillance. You're right. You want a security camera at your house, right? Right. You want security cameras in prisons, perhaps in the meeting areas or whatever. It's not about should there be surveillance. Should AI be used in surveillance? And the arguments against would be the privacy concerns, potential misuse, poor bias in or reflections of natural human bias in the training data that might lead it to not be particularly fair in its judgments.
This is a hard one for me.
Yeah, this is Roger got all serious on us.
Yeah, I'm no sorry. Kidding. It's hard because
our next question is about the death penalty. No, it's not.
This is why I'm horrible at debate, because I'm really good at seeing both sides. You know, I can totally like feel strongly about either side, right? Like, I don't like bad things happening, and if there's a tool to prevent or you know, hold someone accountable for bad things happening, and it's a really effective tool for doing that truly without, you know, all the yucky stuff that comes along with it potentially, then like, okay, I think that's a great thing. Prevent people from doing bad things, or you know, or catch people when they do. But there are so many flaws with the technology, first of all, right now. It's not perfect, and nothing is perfect, but it's really evident when this isn't accurate, right? As someone who's innocent is you know, said to be guilty, and that's a life ruiner. That completely alters a person's life. They are not fair all the time. You know, there is a lot of bias that creeps into these data sets. And so I have a really hard time picking a side on this, because I just don't know that we're quite there yet. And that makes me think that the brakes need to be pumped on really leaning into AI as, you know, the pinnacle tool for surveillance right now, because I can only see it going poorly now. Maybe eventually down the line things get developed and get to a better place and it can be used without the yucky stuff also, but I don't even know if that's possible. There's too much interest, too much self-interest that creeps into these things.
I look at it as a tool, and the question about whether you should use it is, can it be used responsibly? Because I don't know if it's just me, but I look at a lot of this stuff and I feel like I'm missing something, because I don't have a problem with saying, okay, I have a bunch of surveillance footage. I'm looking for a particular person, and I can either look through the surveillance footage myself and take a long time, or say, I'm looking to see if this person was there. AI, run through all that footage and match it for me fast. Then, and this is the most important part, then I look at what it returns and say, is that the person? I don't just say, okay, there they are. We found them, right?
Ding,
and,
ding.
Yeah. And I doubt that anyone in the audience has much of a problem with just that scenario. What happens, though, is in conversations, I think a lot of people start to promise, if they're pushing a product, or expect, if they're thinking about this, like, oh, AI can just do it all for us. Mm-hmm. And that's where I 100% agree with you, Jason. We're far from that situation. I think all the fears about AI sometimes lead us to think it's more capable than it is. And start to allow you to think, well, we could just let it do everything. And it absolutely shouldn't do everything. I would not think we're in a situation where it would be good to let AI just, constantly monitor the surveillance footage and suggest people or things to pay attention to, simply because the training data sets are not good enough for that to be useful yet. But again, even if we did that, you would still need a human to then look at everything that it said and go, okay, is that a thing that's worth paying attention to? And what folks end up worrying about is a bias creeps into us that, well, if the machine said it's a concern, then I guess it is. And I think that's a real concern. But again, this isn't about whether we should do surveillance. This is in places where you would be okay with surveillance, should we be using AI to assist?
And I mean, it's
because you have it in your doorbell. Because,
mm-hmm, yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true. I've got a doorbell, and so yeah, it's probably doing some of this already. So you know what I'm saying
it can tell a dog from a person from a truck.
Totally.
It's very telling. Most of my complaints or concerns about AI used in surveillance is less with the technology and more about the implementation by people, right? If it's if this is done because you don't want to pay for the training for additional personnel to do it, and you just want to do something on the cheap because it's a turnkey solution, and you set it and you don't even monitor, you just let it spit out results and you just go with that. And that's, I think ultimately my issue is that you need some sort of accountability with the people that are involved that set these things up, where they use technology as a shortcut or as a stopgap measure for doing other things because it's cheaper, it's faster, it's less politically complicated for a local government or whatever.
I don't know. I think it's more complicated.
In a lot of cases, it is. But
well, if you can blame a machine versus it's not our training.
Yeah, I get
training,
what you're saying. It's not that it's politically uncomplicated to have surveillance, but it's CYA.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the algorithm. Yeah. What can we do? I mean, we didn't do it.
But that's just an argument of if people can misuse it, we shouldn't let anyone use it. And I'm not really in favor of that argument.
I mean, people can misuse Photoshop. And
sure.
We let them use Photoshop.
Yeah. That doesn't mean also that we should be like, and so everyone can use it however they want. I think
there's a balance.
We're grownups, so we should act like it.
I hope so. Yeah.
Maybe for the snarky email on that one.
Well, you're writing it, so I'm sure it'll come soon. We don't really have time for the third one. Roger thought it would be great for four married guys and Sarah to talk about whether dating apps have made dating better or worse.
Well, in my opinion, when I use them,
let me talk to my wife and I'll get back to you in a week.
I mean, what do y'all want to know?
I don't know. I don't even know enough to ask a question, to be honest.
Yeah, I have no clue. All I can say is I'm glad I don't have to use those because.
Choose to.
Sure.
Some people are, looking for partnerships
it brings to mind, do you even need them? Like, how do people.
I've heard there's a trend against, younger, Gen Z and even, early Gen Alpha dating.
Somebody else said that to me the other day as well. There's a whole backlash. Yeah. We're not doing the online stuff anymore. Making connections, whether it be romantic or friends or, something else. And I was like, really? I didn't know that, but.
Yeah. Sounds like a plane going overhead.
I don't know. I mean, if you think about, on the friend side, I would easily say 93% of the people that are, of my friends are people I've met first in real life. mm-hmm. before we became friends, and maybe the last 7% were people I've known online and then met in person.
Yeah. Online dating used to be the young person's. These kids these days with their online dating. Now it's the millennials and above.
Yeah, because now we have tech. Tech is gonna make all these matches.
Online dating. It must be an old person.
People are like, I guess we have to go to brunch and like meet.
Mom, don't you know it's hip to go to the mall and meet people?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That has never been a way that I haven't met somebody. Not talking about dating, but just like going to the mall. Gosh, I love a good mall.
Yeah.
Give me a mall.
Do you go to the mall to meet somebody?
I meet the best people at
the
mall.
No. I don't go to the mall. When I was 10, that was how you would like
but you'd meet
the boy from the other middle school.
Meet up, yeah. Right. Because everybody, you knew everybody was going there. So.
Yeah.
Also, who doesn't want an Orange Julius?
I was just going to say the same damn thing. Did you read my mind?
I love that's the one reason
why I used to go to
the mall.
Roger, stop reading Jason's mind. It's not
mine. Are you using AI to read my mind or something?
They have a DQ Orange Julius at the Northridge Mall, Roger. You should go check it out. They also have a big train that your kids can ride around the mall.
That's the last thing I need to do. See my kids sit there for an hour. They cruise around the mall on a little train. It's like, they need to be on.
It's a big train. It's actually like human size. Yeah.
Oh wow.
It goes around the mall. It's an indoor mall. I'm not talking like the Grove where they have a train on rails. Like this is just like a self-propelled thing.
It takes them into Build-A-Bear and shows them what they are going to ask you for.
Yeah, yeah.
The train comes back.
Do the Lego store, so. Build-A-Bear. Back out through the
gives
game,
them some coupons.
Board game shop, Miniso, around Tokyo. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for supporting us at Daily Tech News Show's Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS. We got 3 people giving us a raise, and I cannot thank them enough. Andy, thank you for the raise. Sinister208, thank you for the very sinister raise. And Todd, thank you for raising your pledge. We really appreciate that. We take that as a compliment.
Thank you.
Yeah. You all are the best.
That's a fun way to go into our weekend.
Indeed it is. We also have more and more people chatting. Philip Less talking about our game history segment with Scott earlier this week, asking other folks on the Patreon questions about, like, what's the first video game designer that you ever investigated? Having a good conversation there. Arthur P. Johnson commenting. Somebody's, playing background music right
That's
now.
That's me. Sorry.
So Len's on the Patreon right now trying to make some comments. So thank you, everybody.
I'm actually on the dating app here.
So. For supporting us on Tinder. Until tomorrow, everyone, please, if you can, have a good one, but just one.
Have a good day.
Have a great weekend and weekend, internet.
Good day, mate.
Hashtag weekend.